Good afternoon, and welcome back to Naturalistic Support. I'm Arnel Doré, and joining me today is Elaine Durbach. Hi, Elaine.
Hi, Arnel. Hi, everybody.
Hey. Yeah, could barely hear you there, but I know that you'll get louder.
we'll try and get louder. Is that better?
Yeah. Let's see if we can fix our background level here. Okay, yeah, that should be good.
You're coming through good and clear.
Good. Naturalistic Support's a unique approach to lasting personal growth and healthier, more satisfying relationships. On Naturalistic Support, we help each other, combining a progressive understanding of our human experience with peer support. So this involves you calling us to talk about yourselves and to talk to each other. Our number is 212-209-2877. And today, we're going to continue our look at how believers and non-believers get along, some of the ideas that they might share, and how they might cooperate to help make this a better world. Last week, we talked about the challenges of disbelief and the way people who are non-believers can be really marginalized in our often kind of pious religious society that is this cultural undercurrent that sometimes we forget about, but it's always there. And today we're going to pick up where we left off. Now, one of the things we're hoping to do, as I was saying to you, Elaine, just before the show, it'd be nice to hear from the listeners about what they believe and why they believe it.
I think it's fascinating how we shape our beliefs. You know, if they, what we grew up with, if it's what our families taught us or what we absorbed, or whether something happened to us along the way that imprinted a totally different set of beliefs.
Yes. So we want to hear if you have traditional faith-based beliefs. We'd like to hear about that. And if you have supernatural beliefs that aren't traditional, we'd also like to hear about those. And if you're naturalistically inclined, if you don't really resonate with supernatural ideas and you have a naturalistic point of view, we want to hear about that too. And we want to hear why. Why do you have those traditional faith-based beliefs? What keeps you thinking that those are the beliefs that work for you and make sense for you? Or why do you have alternative supernatural beliefs? Or what makes you naturalistic in your worldview? So our number is 212-209-2877, and we'd really like to hear from you about what you believe and why you believe it. There's, you know, Elaine, there's some confusion over some of the terms, because like one of the big confusions is, what is an atheist versus what is someone who's agnostic?
I've gotten mixed up between those two often.
Yeah. Many people are confused thinking that agnostic is a substitute for saying, I'm not sure what I believe. So a lot of people use it to mean that. Like, there might be a God, I don't know, but... And it kind of is close to that, but in actuality, agnostic means not just that I don't know, but that it's unknowable. So agnostic comes from the Greek prefix a, meaning not or without, and gnosis, meaning knowledge. So etymologically, agnostic means without knowledge. The term was coined just about 150 years ago or so by Thomas Henry Huxley, 1869. He was a British biologist, and he was an advocate of Darwin's theory of evolution. So agnostic was meant to contrast with Gnostic, a term used in early Christianity for those who claimed special spiritual knowledge. And Huxley introduced the term at a meeting of the Metaphysical Society. Boy, that I would have loved to have been a fly in the wall there.
You would have fitted right in there.
That would have been pretty cool. So he said, "I invented the word agnostic to denote people who do not pretend that conclusions are certain which are not demonstrated or demonstrable." But today, agnosticism refers to the view that the existence or non-existence of deities is ultimate reality is unknowable. So that differs from atheism, which is lack of belief in God, or theism, which is belief in gods, because its focus is on knowledge rather than belief. So you could be, and what's interesting, Elaine, is you could be a agnostic atheist, or you could be an agnostic believer.
You're going to get us really confused there.
I know. So in other words, what would be an agnostic believer? Okay, so agnostic believer is someone who says, I am agnostic about whether we could ever know for sure whether there is a God or not, or where the universe came from. I don't think that's knowable. But I'm comfortable imagining a God, and that I'll pray sometimes, and I feel like I have a relationship with this higher power. That's where I'm comfortable. So that would be someone who's agnostic, but they're a believer. They might even be a particular believer in a God, so that would make them like an agnostic theist. Equally, there are agnostic atheists, which I would put myself into that category. I resonate with the idea that the ultimate reality is really unknowable to a human mind, at least to an unenhanced or upgraded human mind, because we're kind of at the threshold where enhancements and upgrades might actually be a possibility. But for a normal human mind, knowing seems, that ultimate knowledge seems really a long shot. And so therefore, I don't think it's knowable. But when it comes to my relationship with a God, I don't have that. I'm not comfortable praying or feel the need to do that. Faith doesn't offer me comfort or a comfortable place to go to. So I don't have faith in my life, so therefore I'm an atheist and an agnostic.
Arnell, I hover somewhere in between, I think, judging by these definitions, but I'm curious about your belief, how you've developed this system. You have a great faith in the scientific process.
Yeah.
In testing, in evidence,
mm-hmm.
in being reliant on evidence. What do you say to people who say, I experienced this? It's not something that came from a laboratory or extensive survey. I experienced this, and this is now what I trust.
You know,
somebody who says, in a moment of absolute desperation, I called out for help, and this extraordinary help came. Something happened that couldn't have been expected. Therefore, I believe.
Yeah.
Is that scientific, or is that belief?
Faith-based.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that belief in supernatural things are never going to be scientific, because scientific means it's knowledge that comes as a result of experimentation and the compilation of evidence. And not just the compilation of evidence, but evidence that's been subjected to a filter. A filter which, while it might be the best and most stringent filter you could put it through in your contemporary age that you've come across this knowledge, it for that knowledge to be still be considered good a generation later, it has to then pass through ever more finer filters. It has to stand up to the scrutiny. It has to be reproducible evidence, not just a one-shot deal.
That's an interesting point, that reproducible part.
Yeah.
So I know that people will query scientific method and the bias that testers can bring to it. But if it's reproducible, that does lift it to another level.
Yeah. Now, there's a well-known phenomenon in science that's been identified in recent decades known as the replication crisis. So particularly in the softer sciences like social sciences, there is a crisis of repeating getting the same results when doing a similar study. We don't really know why. We don't really know if that means that the original study is more valid or that the later study is more valid. In some cases, we can see that original studies might be flawed, and so we would rely on the results of a better study. But when both studies or subsequent studies all conform to the same very high standards, it is a little confusing. But you know, the way I think of even science that's a little more squishy than say hard science, it's always, knowledge is always the best knowledge we have relative to something else. So, you know, when you say, like, people who doubt science, I'll say, okay, so you're doubting science, which is evidence-based and about reproducible effects. So what are you believing? You know, and why? And what has, you know, what resonates for you? Now, to answer your question, I might not have really answered your question. When somebody has a personal experience that makes them believe things that are unrecognized by science,
I know that's it's muddying the waters, because if there are people who say, I don't believe anything I can't see with my own eyes, limit themselves in a way that's really dangerous.
Yeah.
We have to accept things that we don't see with our own eyes, but hopefully others have seen with their own eyes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Science does not say to people, unless you've conducted the experiments with plutonium, you have no idea about plutonium. No, results are widely published to share with scientists and non-scientists alike, and we do have to rely on experts, and there is authoritative knowledge, and you know, we have to learn how to be critical thinkers in how we evaluate what's presented as authoritative. And sometimes, you know, it can be confusing. Just think about what's happened to our Google searches. Like 20 years ago, when you got a search result, it was kind of a lot more reliable than today, when the first 20 results are sponsored content.
That's true. And yet 20 years ago, that result you got was based on presumably less input?
Yeah, less input, but also less input pollution,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So now, you know,
that's a great term, information pollution.
Yeah. It's basically, you know, money has rushed in and completely muddied the waters. So, you know, when I do a search now, I don't trust my results, and often you'll get contradictory information, and you have to kind of really look at, well, okay, you know, we talked about this when we did our show about the experimental mindset. You have to ask yourself, where is this information coming from? What's the source? What's their agenda? What have they been associated with in the past? And all these different angles that you have to consider. Elaine, we have a caller on the line. We actually have a couple callers.
Oh,
so
great.
Yeah, so let's try to get to those. Elaine, maybe you want to yell a greeting at this corner.
Welcome to WBAI. You're on the air. What is your name and where are you calling from?
Hello? I think we were hearing something, but go ahead.
All right. I'm going to break into this because I'm not going to repeat myself again. Make sure your radio is down so you can continue on with this conversation. Okay?
Thanks, Rach.
So if there's anything in the background, cut it off.
Yeah.
Talk to your phone.
Lay down the law, Rach.
Understood by everyone, okay?
Okay.
Now, Arnell, take over your program.
thank you, Reggie.
Hello?
Yes. Who's calling? Where are you calling from?
Hi. This is Crystal.
Hey, Crystal.
I think whatever we're invested in, like most of us when we're growing up, like for me, I started going to Pentecostal church with my neighbor when I was like 9 years old. Okay. I really liked it. Now, Pentecostal churches is when they run all over the building and hallelujah, mama, see that, mama, speaking in tongues and all this kind of,
yeah.
The women only wear dresses and no makeup and all this kind of thing. I loved it. Okay. Maybe my life was just limited or something. Because back then, in the early 70s, your parents did everything for you. They fed you, they clothed you, you went to the park. You went to the park and played. They clothed you, they fed you, you went to the park and played. You didn't have responsibility. You know, I didn't have chores, none of this kind of thing. So maybe I just had a limited life. And so when I went with the neighbors, why did my mother let me go with the neighbors? I don't know. My mother believed in God, my family. But anyway, I think it's what we believe, what we grow up. Grew up in a Pentecostal church, somewhat. Then, when I got older, you know how you learn what smoking weed is and all these kind of things here and what have you, and then you wake up, you have this, what is it, epiphany?
Yeah.
I looked in the mirror, and I looked like I was dead. I was at a club, and I'm looking in the mirror dancing, because people always told me how cute I was and how pretty my hair was and all this kind of thing. So I'm looking in the mirror dancing, and I look dead.
Mm. Oh, my gosh. Were you stoned?
Church, huh?
Were you stoned? Were you high?
No, I wasn't high. I wasn't weed up. I was kind of sober, actually.
Wow.
And I looked dead. I don't know if it's because I was religious or what, but I know I started going back to a Pentecostal church. They asked me, you believe in Jesus? And you believe he died and rose the third day? I said, yeah, I believe. That same day, I stopped smoking weed. I stopped getting high. Stopped clubbing, everything. That same day. This big, I stopped doing everything. I continued going to church. I'm leading up to something, but I'm just trying to get where. Okay.
Fascinating.
I always wondered, why do we worship Jesus so much when he got a father, right? Jesus got a father. I always wondered why we worshiping Jesus so much. Then recently, in like 2 years, I found out about this Nicene Council of Bishops, 325 A.D., Nicene Council of Bishops, which they claim that these bishops decided that there's the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. Last thing I'm going to say. Pentecostals and Baptists and all them people believe that the Catholic Church is an abomination, they this and that, they worship Mary and all. So I'm saying to myself, all these other churches are derivatives from the Catholic Church. So what do that make us? If we go about what they believe, other than we don't worship Mary, we believe in the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, we an abomination too. So that's why now I'm stuck, because I'm confused. And the only people that know the answer, I would ask the Baptist preachers and the Pentecostals by the Nicene Council. None of them knew. But there's these people who walk around from the Mormon church. They walk around Harlem. You want to go to church? So I asked one of them, do you know about the Nicene Council? They knew right away what I was talking about.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I'm confused. I want to love Jesus, but I'm so freaking confused at the truth.
Yeah, but well,
I've been in the church.
Right. Well, you know, Crystal, like, in answer to what Elaine was asking too, you know, these beliefs, they have to be personally resonant. So, if something resonates with you personally, if it feels right, you know, that might be the best you can hope for when it comes to faith-based beliefs, because I don't think it's about getting the real evidence and finding out what the truth is when we're talking about faith. Faith is something personal, and it's not...
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah.
Crystal, can I ask you a question? When the Mormons spoke to you, did what they say resonate, or did that also not really fit?
They usually say, you want to come to church?
Yeah.
And because Nicene Council was on my mind. I had recently heard about it.
Yeah, the council at Nicaea. Yep.
And that young man broke it down like it was like, you see where I'm going with this? None of them Baptist, Pentecostal, Lutheran, none of them answered the question. They would just say, well, stick to the Gospels. All you need to know is Jesus Christ. That kid knew what I was talking about.
Yeah. Sometimes people who are critical of the church will be able to be, you know, educated about those who have criticized it in the past. So, yeah, for sure.
It's amazing how people go along with stuff. Because even with me, I'm to the point now where, and I'm not bugging out, because I'm kind of a free, my mind is open to a lot of stuff. So I think eventually, even if I were to say, well, I don't even know if really believe that there is a God, I'm willing to say that, because I'm open to find, I want to know the truth. I want to know, I've been worshiping Jesus all this time, always saying, well, wait a minute, why are we praising him so much and he got a father?
Yeah. Yeah. Crystal, we got another call on the line, but
great.
Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Call again. Talk to you soon. And this is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Gwen.
Hi, Gwen. How are you?
I'm okay. You were saying something that was resonating with me.
Yeah.
You discussed science, and I want to say that I do believe in science. And that's why I found the contradictions between the scientific world and what was going on with COVID so astounding. And as you said, when I looked at what was going on with a myriad of science that was being put out there that was saying that that we could, there were lots of questions, at least, to ask about COVID and the vaccine that they were promoting so heavily. And a lot of these scientists were very well accredited. There was the heart doctor in Texas. I mean, there was just a lot. But, you know, and one of the biggest scientific proponents of questioning of the COVID vaccine was Dr. Gary Null, who is a scientist who's been on here for many years. And so when I kept watching this, because at the beginning, I really wasn't sure about what I was going to do. I wasn't sure whether I was going to take a vaccine or what I wanted to do. But the more I listened and the more I heard the doubts and the more I heard the scientific community that were on the prophet side not willing to release the science, not willing to go any further with their animal testing when the animals started dying from the vaccine. They weren't willing to keep testing anymore, and they just kept putting out more and more preposterous statements. They guaranteed you that you wouldn't get COVID at the beginning if you took the shot, but then people got COVID. My sister got COVID five times after she took it. And so, you know, I do believe in science, and what I don't believe is something that is being promoted by people that are profiting off of bad science.
Yeah, you know, Gwen, these are interesting challenges, right? Because there's a couple of ideas that what you're presenting brings up, which is scientific consensus versus science people who are more marginalized, but who are trying to present a different understanding that they have, and who also are basing their work on the scientific process. And then you're talking about the profit motive, which kind of pollutes so many things, right? It's hard to trust when you know Big Pharma, you know, has a profit motive, and the history is they've done things that are unconscionable. And so how can you trust?
Exactly. And that's what I the whole point of when I was listening, I feel that you were probably using science as maybe an example this time. But, you know, I think the perplexing part about the whole COVID, you know, debacle was that there was so much other science that was really good science, like Dr. Peter McCullough is one of the best heart doctors in the United States of America. There was no profit motive for him because he certainly wasn't getting anything. And yet, you know, he couldn't get his opinions out there. You couldn't even get your opinion on WBAI. I mean, Gary Noel put it out there, but nobody else would dare speak about it. And then people started getting really hostile about it. Like, sometimes I hear David Rothenberg talk terribly about people and how stupid they were because they weren't going along with the go along to get along.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Can I finish, please? I just want to say one last thing. One of the reasons why I didn't go along with it was that I know that when my nephew was perfectly healthy, and he was a very sweet boy, went in to get all of his shots, he came out with autism afterwards. And so I don't just stick things in my arms unless I know now what it is you're going to stick in my arm. And if you can't give me a really good, solid explanation for what it is you're going to put in me, then I'm not really interested in being the guinea pig for anybody. Yeah. Big Pharma makes a ton of money off of exploiting people in the United States, and they have hurt a lot of people in the United States.
I agree, Gwen, for sure.
Thanks.
For sure. Okay. We should take our bottom of the hour break, Elaine, and then we'll come back. Our number is 212-209-2877. We want to hear from you listeners about what you believe and why you believe it, and whether you have believers in your life that you argue with, or non-believers that are challenging. We want to hear about all of it. 212-209-2877.
You're listening to Naturalistic Support right here on 99.5 FM WBAI New York.
Non-commercial, listener sponsored.
Peace and Justice Radio.
On Wednesdays from 2 to 3, Naturalistic Support is taking listener calls, offering a revolutionary new way to think about ourselves and reach out to each other.
I just wanted to call in to give encouragement to the last caller.
It hit right on where I am right at this moment.
You really hit the proverbial nail on the head.
I really connected with what you were saying about loneliness.
We are hardwired to help each other.
Getting past the blame, owning your own truth, letting go of judgmental thoughts.
I felt so fortunate to hear this.
You went through every single one of the things that I've been working on for my life. Now, you said all that. I'm like, holy cow, what is this guy doing? Is he talking to me right now?
The Naturalistic Revolution is a game changer. Listen to us break it down on Wednesdays from 2 to 3.
I want to thank you so much. You helped me so much.
We're back. This is Naturalistic Support. Today we're looking at belief and non-belief. And I'm on the line. This is Arnell Doray. And joining me on the line here is Elaine Durbach.
Wow, Arnell, you kind of led a pigeon back in the on the loose there. But that debate about the vaccinations is a perfect example of belief and non-belief and contradictory beliefs. where we all kind of dug in our heels into what we felt at home with, or where our community or our closest people or our experiences resonated with a certain outlook. And boy, we got fierce about it.
Well, yeah, there's a real danger to being doctrinaire. And I think that, distance has proven that some of the marginalized voices should have been given more credence than they were. All kinds of contradictions. First of all, as Gwen was saying, we were made to believe that the vaccine would keep us from getting COVID. It turns out you still get COVID. It's just the effects are not deadly. Whereas,
which is a huge step forward.
I mean, that's a big thing. I'll take a COVID cold over the kind of COVID that people were dying by the thousands every day.
Yeah.
Everything is relative.
My source on that, my faith, seemed to come from my sister-in-law, who was a nurse at a huge hospital that was dealing with hundreds of patients. And I took her views and her opinions as the most solid and reliable. But I also know that she also had sets of belief, and that she came from her own education, her own training, and then her own experience. So that even somebody who was nursing hundreds of patients and breaking her heart, I mean, somebody was a cool, calm, collected nurse, was having sleepless nights in agony over what she was witnessing.
Yeah.
But even she was not entirely objective and not entirely devoid of prejudice.
Yeah, well, you know, as we were saying earlier, It's not an isolated idea to say, here's what I'm relying on for my knowledge. It's not inside of, it's not separate from the rest of knowledge. The rest of knowledge has all knowledge has a basis for its justification, why it's valid. And what we try to do, or what we, I think, are best off trying to do, is trying to find what's most valid. What seems to have the scientific community by and large behind it. Even though, by and large, the scientific community could be wrong. They definitely could be wrong. But what is the alternative? What's the next best way of knowing if we're not using the scientific method? Well, the next best way of knowing is really crappy. It's really substandard.
What would you say it is? What is that next best?
Well, it could be based on divine revelation. It could be based on traditional folk remedies. It could be based on a lot of the thinking that before science came to dominate our way of knowing, there's a long history. The science is very new, but civilization is old, relatively, right? Thousands of years old. And people died left and right for the stuff that science can cure them of, or at least at least extend their lives, healthy lives, for decades. But everything gets more complicated when we factor in the profit motive, right? So the profit motive, it's the same thing with polluting the search results on Google or any search engine. It's the same thing with trying to figure out, is this just big pharma trying to get me to take a vaccine that I don't need, or is the vaccine basically a modern miracle that is making possible getting quite senior in age without developing shingles, without dying from the flu, without the various other things that threaten us?
Yeah, exactly. Do you ever read Angela's Ashes?
No, my daughter was reading that, and I heard
great
about
book.
That.
Yeah. Brilliant book, but yeah, it yeah. gave this incredibly vivid image of people living without the benefits of a lot of modern developments and without much modern medicine. Some traditional remedies, but, you know, folk remedies, and dying. I mean, just, you know, children died so easily. Families lost so many kids. You'd have, you know, 7 or 8 kids, and 4 of them would die.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, we forget. It's just so recent that we've discovered antibiotics. It's just so recent that we, you know, we've been able to keep tuberculosis at bay. That we, the kind of things that just killed people left and right 100 years ago, 150 years ago, death was just so common. I forget the exact number, but infant mortality was off the charts to a point where when we started to turn the corner on infant mortality, we had lots of people saying, oh, this is going to cause a population boom that the world can't handle. How are we going to feed all these people? That was actually,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was
yes.
actually a big yes. concern.
I mean, I think the whole boom in birth control went with along with that, that all of a sudden you could count on holding on to the kids that you had.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You didn't need a lot of spares.
Yeah. We are available to talk to you at 212-209-2877. And we're talking about belief. We'd like to hear about what you believe, particularly if your beliefs are unconventional. What if you're a naturalist? What made you become naturalistic? And how do you define that? You know, Elaine, there's tension to a degree of people who are part of the free thought community, whether they're atheists, agnostics, skeptics, humanists, secular humanists. There's some tension between them and their religious family members or neighbors and or co-workers. And
the other way around.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, tension's on both sides.
You know, there have been a number of, I think in the Jewish community, there was this kind of unusual turnaround where so-called modern thinking parents found themselves with children who became ultra-Orthodox.
Right, right. Yeah, that's, for me, I think that would have been the definition of failure.
very, very hard to take.
That would have been really hard to swallow for me.
What I found difficult with it is that the people who, you know, found great joy and sense of belonging with these much stricter beliefs limited the education of their children. So they turned away from the very high-level education that they'd been offered or that their parents had and put their kids into these religious schools.
Yeah, I know, I know.
It just horrifies me, but obviously I'm coming from my prejudices.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, it's also, you know, I think that, yeah, we all have our bias, but I think that it's really challenging when we're talking about, eschewing modern scientific knowledge in favor of ancient scrolls. And, I don't think that that's just, you know, bias and prejudice that makes us prefer one over the other. One has been demonstrably effective in making our world better, and the other really hasn't been. We have a couple more callers on the line, so let's get to those. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from?
This is Joni. I'm calling from Jersey.
Hey, Joni. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
All right. So have you been listening to what we're talking about?
I most certainly have been.
Okay.
Past couple of weeks. And I decided to call today. It was a very interesting conversation. And I wanted to speak to you about different religions, beliefs, knowing this, and because I've been involved in this for a long time. I come from a background where some of the family, they're Jewish. Some of them are Protestant. Some of them are born again. And various levels of religion. Some of them are Muslim.
If you talk a little more into the phone, we could barely hear you there.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, go on.
It sounds like a fascinating family, Johnny.
Yeah, sounds like I can imagine what Thanksgiving is like.
Well, actually, the family is a small family, but we became, I guess, everyone got involved in their own particular, you know, nuclear families. And so at one point, I would invite students from Columbia to the house. From my religious organization that I was working with.
Yeah.
And I would have students come in during the holidays. But I said all of that to say that in my family, we've had different religions, and some of those religions are conflicting religions within themselves.
Sure.
And it made me really have to dig down deep and to understand what are these different religions about. And it seems that to me that everyone had a conflict with someone else in a different particular religion. And so after many decades of thought, I've come to the conclusion that there are people who know and people who don't know. And that's, you know, in every religion, in every sense of the existence, they either know or they don't know, and they will know. Some people will know, and some people will never know.
And what makes you know what you know?
Living 67 years.
Okay.
And seeing a lot.
Okay.
But Joni, there are other people who are your age or older who maybe, as you say, don't know?
Yes, and I think that that's why we have a great deal of conflict. We're having conflict, and it's consistent. And, you're speaking of, like, science and belief. And I'm just thinking, at one time, there were people saying, it's an electrical rainstorm, and God is angry, or God is crying.
Yeah.
We've come as a society a long way as we understand through science, as we understand things, our views and our point of view changes. But if we're in an environment where we're not exposed to other people's ideas or even our own imagination, then we're doomed to stay stagnant. And I also noticed that there's a great deal of conflict in our society right now.
Yep.
And a lot of it stems from individuals saying I'm right and you're wrong, and that there isn't any room.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big question. You know, you're touching on the central question in our program, which is, you know, how do we reliably come to the conclusions we come to, or come to the beliefs that we come to? And, you know, I just think that when you talk about, well, I know because I've lived these several decades and I've learned these things, and I believe that totally. But, you know, also we need to kind of partition personal beliefs which cannot be objectively verified in a way that, like, everybody would agree on. Oh, yes, that's completely, you know, solid. There's evidence for that. That's objectively true. So personal beliefs that are objectively true that can be shared, and then personal beliefs that there's no way we could prove this to someone else, that this is personal for me, this is my truth. And I think that it would serve us so well if instead of, you know, pretending that our personal beliefs, and often those are things having to do with supernatural ideas, that those personal beliefs, if we just recognize that we can't pretend that they're objectively true. We have to acknowledge that someone's conflicting personal beliefs, that's 180 degrees from mine, that's true for them, and I'm not going to argue that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And some individuals are able to experience phenomena that others are not. You know, I mean, and that's what you're... It seems to me. I don't know. Am I correct?
I mean, the thing is that when you say experience phenomenon, I would say have experiences, because you're assuming the phenomenon exists. I can't assume that. All I know is somebody has experiences and it affects them and changes what they believe and why they believe what they believe. And some of those experiences are objectively real, which means it's on a plane that I can participate in it and share it and come to the same conclusion. And some of it, depending on the idea and the belief, some of it may be not objectively verifiable. Some of it may be personal, and I have no business critiquing it, because it's not something that's available to me. Joni, we have a couple other callers on the line too that we have to get to. So I thank you for your call, and ask you to call again, please. And we have another call on the line. This is WBAI.
Yes.
You're
Maya,
on the air.
Steve.
Hey, Maya.
Yes. Listen, WBAI must fix his phones or phone system, because when you finally you have to repeat. Call to get it ring, and then when you're on the queue to get on the air, I totally miss most of what Joan had to say on the queue line. You faded in and out, so we must have a better interaction. Bottom line,
I agree.
Absolutely.
I'll bring it up at the next staff meeting for sure.
Yes. My first point is to get your email. Clarify, I believe Arnell is spelled with two L's.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can hear your email, and I'll answer your question.
Yeah, you could always get me at Arnell, followed by the number 7, at JUNO.com. So, yeah.
Okay, and Arnell is with two L's?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you for that.
You got that, Maya.
The question you asked at the beginning, I am not of the regular belief system. I forget how you put the question, but I'm generally out of that box for sure. And I also, because I've experienced some what you would term supernatural, such as having precognitive life-saving precognitive dream. I'm a regular listener and supporter, and they support me hugely at Coast to Coast AM, so they deal with the paranormal, and from what I hear, that is real. That's all I have to say.
Okay, all right.
At WBAI, please get the phone system.
Thank you, Maya. We could fit one last caller in, I think. Maya, thank you for that. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling?
Hello, I'm Dan.
Dean?
Dan.
Hi.
Dan? Dan, calling from where?
Naugatuck, Connecticut.
Okay. We have like 2 minutes, Dan. Just...
I got you.
Yeah.
So it sounded like you're looking for a spiritual scientist. I would say I'm a spiritual scientist. For 4 years... I was a miracle worker or warlock or whatever you want to call it. I've done all types of spells, miracles, stuff like that. you know, I really enjoyed that. I loved it. It was fun. It felt, it made me feel powerful to be able to do stuff like that. But then I had to turn it in. I had to say, you know what, there's got to be a higher power here. So I got very scientifical. I said, how do I meet God? And it says in the Bible, seek him with all your heart and turn away from sin. So that's what I did for 3 months during COVID. I had nothing else to do, so I just turned away from sin. And sure enough, I had a dream. And in the dream, you know, I already know what's going to happen before it's going to happen. Somebody's going to tell me something. A man walks up to me in the dream, and it's as crystal clear as a blue ocean. It says, control the interwebs. Now I am looking at this man, and, you know, it looks kind of like Jesus, you know, here down to the shoulders. And all of a sudden, like, I'm looking at him, and he had an innocent face looking kind of like Jesus. And all of a sudden, the fear of God came over this guy, and I felt a supernatural fear, and it was like, am I looking at the devil? And that's when I bowed. My head shot to the left. My head shot, because I was sitting down. I couldn't go to my knees. And he said, defend my crown. And clarify, I believe Jesus is God in the flesh. He came here as a human. We have to have
Dan, we have to close it up, but this is fascinating stuff. Not stuff you hear every day, and obviously you went through some profound experience there. Dan, call us again, and we actually have to kind of wrap up the show now.
What a great concluding note. Wow.
Yeah. You've been listening to Naturalistic Support. I'm Arnell Doré. Joining me today was Elaine Durbach. Thanks to our engineer Rich Johnson and to Hilla Weiss for her support. Tune in again next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for another edition of Naturalistic Support. Archived editions of our program can be found on our website at wbai.org. and at equaltimeforfreethought.org. Hi to my foster mom, Marilyn. And remember, always try to be kind, because you never really know what someone else is going through.